This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling. This week's episode of Shake Them Ropes is sponsored by Mindy's Bakery in Chicago, Illinois. Are you fucking pissed?
The fact that I have to sit up here because we have irresponsible people who call themselves EVPs and couldn't fucking manage a target.
All these muffins are still good.
I'm hurt and I'm old and I'm fucking tired and I work with fucking children.
Even then.
This is from Mindy's Bakery, by the way. It's a great place in Chicago if you like pastries and baked goods. I suggest you go there. They're closed on Mondays and Tuesdays, though.
Mindy's Bakery in Chicago, Illinois.
Yeah, it's Mindy's Bakery.
Closed on fucking Mondays and Tuesdays.
Hey, kids, do you like professional wrestling? We like professional wrestling, too. Seems to be a bit to talk about this week, huh? This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. We are sponsored this week by HelloFresh and, of course, Mindy's Bakery.
Really excited to have them on the show here this week. It's so cool.
A foul mouth there. Mindy's Bakery offer pot muffins because, well, I have a lot of respect for straight edge. If someone could have used one this week.
I don't know, man. You pitched this to me the other day. I keep thinking about CM Punk discovering that he's on a pot brownie at that particular moment in time and going apoplectic.
Yeah, yeah. You put this, what did you do to me? What?
Oh, God. You surprise dosed me?
Yeah, that would be bad news. But yeah, we'll get into the news. As best as we can. So, the fallout from All Out at the Scrum. CM Punk decides he's not taking any prisoners. Starts talking about how bad wrestling journalists are. Starts talking about Adam Page. Starts talking about the Bucks. Starts complaining. He was hurt in the match as well. Looks like he's going to be out for a while, but he's going to be out for a while regardless. Stripped of the world heavyweight title for AEW. Additionally, also stripped Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. The Trios title also crowned. Why is that, you ask? Well, if you've been living under a rock or you just don't follow the internet for any reason, there's a few of you that might be like that. Well, Kenny and the Bucks decided to go talk to CM Punk in his dressing room afterwards. A fight broke out. Depending on who you believe, a chair might have been thrown. A Jackson might have been knocked out. A Kenny Omega might have been bit. A puppy might have been rescued. But nevertheless, all four of them have been suspended. Also suspended Ace Steel, the aforementioned person who allegedly bit Kenny Omega. Michael Nakazawa, Brandon Cutler, Christopher Daniels. Also allegedly in this meeting as witnesses, or at least came in at some point, were Mega Parekh, chief legal officer of AEW. That's always great. But yes, not a lot of people saying a lot of things on television this week because there are possible legal repercussions to it. But nevertheless, they were not on. The show, quote unquote, went on with a tournament for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship, which will be crowned in the aforementioned Long Island, New York, in the Arthur Ashe Center. And we have some thoughts. Chris, I will let you go first, I guess.
Boy.
Unless you want me to and you can respond.
I'm kind of interested in reacting off of you, but like, okay, let's start on the top line here, which at least for me is that this is a failure of Tony Khan's leadership. At the fundamental core, I know everyone's like, oh, the Bucks did this, CM Punk did this, and if you go back a few months ago, this happened, and if you go back a couple weeks ago, this happened, and then CM Punk said that, and then yes, all of these things. We'll cover all of the blocking and the geography and all of that. But at the top of this org chart is Tony Khan, who is not just some like aloof executive who like lives on an island and maybe isn't super aware of the machinations of his large multinational corporation or whatever. This is a day-to-day owner operator who is in the trenches talking to everyone in that locker room on a regular basis. He has his pulse on the locker room. He knew that things were bubbling up here. And I feel like it's impossible to argue that he had no idea that this was happening. If he didn't, that's still a failure of leadership. But I simply don't believe that. But if he didn't, it'd be just a damning indictment on this guy's level of obliviousness. But I'll go further on this, because at the end of the pay-per-view, I thought was an unbelievably interesting decision before I saw the scrum, which was to work in this phone call, which I believe is a worked phone call. I don't think this is the original phone call.
I don't think MJF has a answering machine.
Right. Yeah, right. So like to basically like kayfabe in this sort of like phone call that built off of the outside of the ring drama from the last pay-per-view. It ends up serving as this weird wraparound metaphor, and it sort of shows, well, Tony Khan has this mindset of like, maybe we can turn reality into good business, brother. And I think that's very much what's underpinning the relaunch of MJF here. And I think in his head, as he was watching all of this stuff bubbling with the Bucks and Omega and CM Punk, I think in Tony's brain, he was thinking, oh, there's a tremendous opportunity for good business to, you know, be bubbling up here. This will be great. These will be really hot angles. And then Punk steamrolls Tony Khan on the dais there.
Let me hold up here, because I want to get in my top line thought, because it's kind of in line with yours.
Okay.
It's twofold. Number one, there are no good guys in this situation. Everybody is at fault, including Adam Page. And I'll get into them in a bit. But really, my top line thought was Tony Khan's the guy at fault here. He is the man in charge. He could have squashed this at various points. When Adam Page went and did that to Punk on his promo, could have been punished then. Could have been the beef could have been squashed then. There was allegedly a sit down, but you know what? Something more had to be done. When Punk gave his receipt months later by making Adam Page look stupid on TV by calling him out and Paige not being able to respond, Tony could have done something right there and then too. He could have punished Punk. He could have punished everybody. He could have brought everybody in the room and say, hey, look, this has to come to a stop right now, or none of you are ever having this title. Some of you may not have a job ever again, et cetera, et cetera. It could have been stopped at the scrum, even when Punk started going off the rails here. Tony Khan could have just ended the press conference right there, but because of his transparency gimmick, he decided not to, and he decided to keep it going thinking it would get back on track. He was wrong. Tony Khan is, in my mind, a process manager versus a people manager. I think he wants to avoid conflict at all costs, and I think he's delegated authority a little bit, but he also wants to be in control, and that's a problem. When you don't want to deal with the problems, you can't not be a people person. You can't avoid it. You can't sit in an office booking and saying you handle it or whatever. Unless you just don't want to be handled and you want to do like, you want to have fist fights and you have people, you know, doing these things in there. But yes, Tony Khan's lack of management skills here failed him. And for all the people who are saying, well, he's involved in two different sports organizations, he's not the one that goes in when a guy needs to be cut, looks him in the eye and says, we're not going to be using you this year. He's not. He's a guy, he might be in on the means, he might be in on some of the economics of it. He might be on the spreadsheet crunching of it, but he's not the guy who looks at you and says, you're not going to be able to play in this organization this year because you're not good enough. Because he wants to avoid those types of things. He's not a general manager. He's never had that kind of experience. He's a guy with management experience, but it seems to be more of a process manager versus a people manager. But yes, Tony Khan had multiple opportunities to squash this, and he didn't.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, this just doesn't go down like this if Khan manages things differently.
Yes.
All of the same tensions, dislikes, animuses, all these sorts of things, these are nothing new under the sun, especially not in the world of professional wrestling.
Or any creative endeavor. Hollywood, yeah. TV shows, TV staffing, improv groups, for God's sakes. This, I mean, these are all headstrong people with big egos, and you need someone to be able to control that. It's not all kumbaya, we all hate Vince McMahon.
And I want to build off that other point that you opened up with, which is, and I guess this is somewhat pointed at like the broader community too, which is like, it's possible to process this, guys, where nobody's actually looking better coming out of this.
Yes.
You don't have to pick a hero in this one because there aren't any. Nobody, and I don't care if Kenny Omega's, you know, leaking out to the press that he was trying to rescue a dog. We'll talk about that in a second.
Oh,
no, I've got things to say on that, Hawkins. No, the goofy shoes. No, you actually don't have to like any of these people more coming out of this. You don't have to hate any of them either, but you can, like, across the board, lose respect for everybody's conduct here, which has been my net result of this. I was really baffled by the sort of reception to Khan issuing these suspensions, which were like just sort of the most obvious and basic disciplinary action that needed to happen, especially pending like legal ramifications, and people talking as though the suspensions were like Tony really taking charge here.
Yeah.
Like he needed to do this. If he didn't do this, it'd be dereliction. But him doing it's not him taking charge.
Yeah, you're giving him credit for things he's supposed to be doing already. It's one of those things like at the scrum, when once Colt Cabana's brought up, Tony steps in and goes, hey, I made that decision to send him to ROH. End of story. And we're over it and we're on to moving or whatever. Or will you interrupt Punk and you say no? But let's break down the players here because there's a lot of crap to go around. Adam Page, I don't understand when the well was poisoned with him for CM Punk because he never worked with Punk in another organization. And I don't know how long it was until that program started, but him coming out and basically saying he's a locker room cancer, like a couple weeks into Punk's tenure, that means somebody was talking.
Right.
And I think that's what Punk's problem was too, a little bit, was that the gossip mongers around basically not
right,
giving him a
chance. I'm sure Punk's looking at the Page thing and going, I barely know this guy. Why does this guy have such a strongly formed negative opinion of me? And the only answer that makes any sort of sense is, well, somebody said that about me.
Yes. That's a conclusion I have also come to. Punk, I am baffled by this because he goes into the scrum. He starts talking to Nick Houseman, who is, I believe he used to be in Comedy Sports in Chicago. He's an improviser from Chicago. That's why I asked, do you still do improv? And I believe, and it was one of those things where he was trying to nail Houseman on being friends with Colt Cabana because he was going in there originally, at least, to disrespect everybody in that room. He didn't bring six pack of soda and a bunch of baked goods to start eating them on the microphone because he was hungry. He was making a mockery of the process. He doesn't, because all those people in that room in some way or form are playing a role in the professional wrestling industry, but they're also in some ways trying to use friendship to gain access, and Punk doesn't have a lot of respect for that, and I get that.
And I think there's also a bit of disdain towards people in wrestling press who drape themselves in the mantle of journalist,
yes,
but especially in the estimation of a number of workers. And I mean, honestly, people like myself too, frequently fall short of meeting what you would consider to be good journalistic standards. They're too loyal to one source, uh-huh, too often, you know, because they get access to one source, they report one side's story sort of dutifully. And like, I get how it rubs a lot of wrestlers the wrong way, especially when, yes, these people then have this umbrage, like, how dare you do this to the wrestling press?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's like, But he wants the demarcation line. Hey, look, you're not part of this business. I don't care how much Kenny and the Bucks leaked to Meltzer, you know, that kind of thing. So he's just clowning, and he goes into these things about Colt because he was really trying to nail Houseman on being friends, but didn't get there. But then just wanted to rail about that.
Oh, and real quickly on Paige, just one last thought on Paige. I looked up this week because I wasn't entirely clear whether or not he was a vice president or not. And he's not. And like, no. That makes the workers' rights promo thing that he did even weirder because it had very much the tone of figures of management. That like, yes. he's the labor room, you know, he's the labor leader in the locker room, all that sort of thing. Well, who the figures of management be? I'm not saying it's coming from Khan. I think it's got to be coming from the executive vice presidents. I think Punk, looking at the Paige situation, is going, based off of this promo, who poisoned this well? And I think his conclusion is it was the Bucks who poisoned the well with Adam Paige. Whether that's right or wrong, I'm just looking at that promo again, trying to see it through his eyes, and I see how he would scan it that way.
We were all friends here until you came, and then you took away our buddy Colt. Yeah, I mean, that's how it was viewed to me. But Punk continues, and he starts, going in on the Paige interview where he basically said he doesn't take advice from veterans. And I get that, but I assume here. The problem with Punk is Punk's a jerk, but Punk's also a jerk with a point. Punk read those comments. Punk didn't listen to those comments. If you listen to the comments, it's kind of like, look, I don't take advice because I kind of want to make my own mistakes. It's
But then he goes further. Kind of. And I've seen people spinning it that way
right.
This week, too. Okay. But I also think the same people who have been presenting that quote need to listen to the tail end of it, where Paige then goes on to go like, yeah, and, you know, me and the Bucks and Omega, we've, you know, built a pretty successful brand here. And he's not wrong about any of that. But, like, I think, again, that second part of it clearly belies the fact that there's not actually that much self-deprecation here. He's pretty confident that him and his friends, the Jacksons and Kenny Omega, have got this formula figured out for what wrestling is in the late 20-teens and the 2020s going forward here. So no, I don't think he's not, haha, I won't take any, but no, he was sort of saying, okay. Yeah, well, have it kind of figured out.
And let me give you a panel point on that. Remember, Punk was offered AEW. When it was open, he didn't want to be a part of a thing that failed. He wanted to wait to see if it succeeded first. And I think that rubs a lot of those guys the wrong way. Like, you don't have the faith in us to come and be a part of this right now, to be a part of the opening thing. You want to ride our coattails, etc. I can understand the animus there.
Yeah. No, for sure. I get why these guys don't like each other.
Yeah.
They have a lot of decently... I mean, they have reasonable beefs with one another, or certainly beefs where one can reasonably go, yeah, like, you guys would not like each other and like each other.
And so in the midst, he also says, we're not in Reseda or whatever. And I've had similar thoughts about how AEW runs its business in terms of, are these guys serious about growing the company, or they just want to have fun and run and be wrestlers? I can see why they'd be upset by that accusation, but I think it does have a little bit of merit. It's just, that's not the time and place for any of this. None of this is the time and place for any of this. This has to happen behind closed doors in calm meetings or Zoom meetings where you're not in person with anybody and talking this stuff out and arguing your point, and whatever Tony says, go. Now we get to the other part of this, which is Punk is saying, hey, you want to be a man about my room's always open? Come find me. Well, right afterwards, guess who decides to do that? Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. And look, you can say whether or not kick down the door, which came from the Punk camp of it, was literal or figurative. But nevertheless, this is not the time to discuss these issues. Because everybody's
The geography thing is the biggest problem for the Young Bucks here, right? They have this noble version of events where, like, they were going to come down and just have a chat.
No. Their side of the story is much like, well, we were in a prayer group and we heard Brother Phil was upset, so we decided to come down. Oh, Brother Phil, I hear you're hurting right now. Dear brother, tell us what the issue was. And oh, a puppy. We can't have that here in the yes. It's way too Disney-fied.
No, it's way too Disney-fied. And like you, I mean, there's just a number of things working against him, right? This is not. It's not that Punk came off hot from that dais and then walked and stormed down to their locker room. Punk came off hot from that dais, went back to his locker room, but basically issued what I think any reasonable person, especially someone who likes to go and parse words and analyze the ins and outs of every little quote. There are a number throughout that press conference. I would read it. I don't know how many F words we're trying to work into this show here. So I'll drop it and just say that there are enough quotes throughout there where I believe the principle of fair warning is applicable here. And what do I mean by that, Hawkins? What I mean is that CM Punk said pretty clearly, if you come and step to me and you got a problem to me, we can have it out. We can have a little fight. Whether if you have a problem with me, let's effing go is one of the quotes I have written down from that presser there. It's very clear that what Punk is saying, and you don't have to agree with this, you don't have to say that this is a morally right position to have, you don't have to do a number of different things, but what Punk is saying is, where my headspace is at this time, coming out of this press conference, is that if you come down and you want to talk to me and have words with me, let's go, let's have a fight. You are right, you would be reasonable to expect that such an encounter, especially if I don't like you already and you're one of the named names here, like Scott Colton or Matt or Nick Jackson or Adam Page or Kenny Omega, yeah, if you want to have words with me, we can have words, and they're going to get physical. I'm not saying that's right, but he stated that out into the air. So then upon breaking the silence of their meditative prayer or whatever the Bucks were doing backstage, they decided to walk across the building.
Okay, before you get into the fight, though, I want to clear one thing up as well. I don't think Punk necessarily wants to say, let's have a fight.
I also walk up and down this hallway.
No. What I meant by that was he was sick and tired of people running to Dave Meltzer to talk about Punk instead of saying the problems to Punk himself. And that's a very valid point as well in this whole industry, is that people go running to Sean Ross Sapp and to Dave Meltzer instead of actually bringing the problems to the source of the problem.
Right. I think that's correct. And I think when you say he didn't want to have a fight in the literal sense of he was not going to go and start fisticuffs, he was not going to travel out of his way to start a fisticuffs encounter.
Right.
Now, on the other hand,
yes.
Let us suppose Matt, Nick, and Kenny are not the innocent little choir boys who love to rescue school children and puppy dogs. Let me paint a different picture for you real quickly. I don't know what happened, but allow me to just play a slightly different version of events given what we kind of do know here. Matt and Nick and Kenny hear all of this backstage. The press are still going on. They're pretty cheesed about this. It's now Swerve and Keith on the stand. They've been beefing about that. They've been sitting there and getting hotter and hotter about this. And they're like, you know what? F it. Let's go down and talk to Punk. Let's go down and let's settle it. He said he wants to have words with us. Let's have words with him. Okay. Now, that doesn't mean they want to go down and fight the guy or whatever, but that does mean that they make the elective decision. Oh, by the way, are they executive vice presidents at this time? Let us discuss that in a moment.
Yes, that is the point I was going to bring up. I don't want you to steal my thunder here, so I'm cutting
in. Let us discuss that in a moment. Yeah. They choose to go down there, and all I'm saying is, so they knock on this door. I'm guessing they weren't like, geez, Philip, we heard that you were a bit troubled there earlier listening to Mr. Khan's speech. I'm sure it didn't quite have that tone. And then this door opens. You have CM Punk, the rabid Ace Steel, who needs to get a tetanus shot. No, he should be gone from the company. Like, let's make no bones about this. But it's like two guys, they are cornered physically because like they're in a room with no exit door.
Ace Steel's wife who has a broken foot, injured.
Yes. And now and this dog. Okay. So you're CM Punk. You see three guys, at least three guys who actively don't like you. You don't like them, and you've just said stuff about them. And then one of those guys goes to grab your dog. Dog owners, Think about this for 30 seconds, please. What would your reaction to this be? It would not be, oh, wow, Mr. Omega, whom I hate, is trying to do me a solid right now. No, it would be, what the F is Kenny Omega doing to my dog right now? It would make you more angry, rightfully so. Again, I'm not defending all of this, but like, I just feel, especially in a lot of the presentation of where was Punk's head at in all of this, you cornered a dude. You had him outnumbered, then you start trying to take his dog away, and his friend's wife's in there and hurt, and it looks like these guys are down here to start a fight? Like, yeah, things escalated. Yeah.
Bring in the dog to work. What did the executive do?
Oh, yes, it's a douche move. I'm not denying that. I'm not denying it's not a douche. Like, dude, I didn't say I like any of these people more at the end of this.
Right, no, I get that. No. But everybody's but like, that's actually puppy. All... It's like, why does he have a puppy at a pro wrestling show? Leave that thing at home.
But yes, now let's talk about the executive vice president. Yes. Thing. Go for it, Thunderboy.
Thank you. They are not actual vice presidents with power. These are ceremonial vice presidents. I believe the Jacksons are involved in merchandise. I believe Kenny's official title has to do with the video game. But boy, does this feel like they're trying to big time Punk with the vice president stuff coming in there. And they've brought actual officers with them. Because if you remember Mega Parekh and Chris Daniels, who is also, I believe, in talent relations with them. So they've brought management to back up their point. Or at least they've gone to fetch them, one of the two things. And this feels like a pure power move to me, Chris. This feels like, oh, we're the officers of this company, and you can't be going around here thinking you own the place, blah, 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 in some ways. It feels like they're trying to big time a guy who actually has more stroke in the company because he carries the big belt. And Punk's not going to be intimidated by that stuff. Now, was anything said before Fist flew? I don't know. You better hope so, because if Punk just started swinging and people started throwing chairs, then they're both probably gone. But at the same time, this is a power move more than anything else, as opposed to a try. I mean, if you really want to try and calm things down, you wait until Tuesday to call the guy.
Right.
And you say, let's go out to eat.
There's no reason to do this. This is so obviously escalatory. The geography and the timing of this are damning indictments of the Bucks and Omega as peacemakers, as a narrative. And it's actually been stunning to me that this has not been more thoroughly gone through and stripped to shreds, because it's goofy. Yes, if they really wanted to have a discussion with him, you mentioned earlier, a good forum, Zoom. How about another good forum the next day? How about another good forum anywhere else but the arena when CM Punk is covered in blood? Like any number of different things.
How about you have a little bit of a mini arbitration session with Mega Parekh if you're gonna bring legal involved? You wait until everybody's calmed down and then you talk all of this through.
And then, I'll go one step further. It did feel like a total nerd move. If the whole, oh, we're trying to do this as an official action thing.
Yes.
Like a total nerd move. Total, and it would, yes, I imagine it would make CM Punk, Phil Brooks even more angry. Because it's sort of like, this is exactly my point.
Yeah, you guys, and it's his point, because he hates clips.
You guys
are afraid of
direct confrontation. You guys will do all sorts of little snipey, hidey games because you're scared, because you're ninnies. I think if that's what's actually... I mean, I've also heard that like Mega Parekh just happened to be like in the vicinity.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, and I mean that's also with MJF too. I don't think
to me it was probably they went down themselves, and then somebody said, "Oh crap, they're going to go get Punk. Go get somebody to stop this."
So I don't think they were really doing it as EVPs or even under official stuff. But if they were, I mean, I just think that would be unbelievably not flattering. And then now, even if they're not, this is wildly unprofessional, and they're the escalators here. Punk said what he said. What he said was bad, unprofessional, something meriting of disciplinary action, something meriting of suspension.
Yeah.
But it does not justify taking a field trip down to Punk's locker room, whether it is to have a civil, peaceable discussion or something else. But it's the timing.
Where's this Mindy's place you speak of, Punk?
Yo, I heard some good things about some muffins. Yeah, like... Like,
we're staying till Wednesday in Chicago. Oh, really? Are you? You're gonna miss Dynamite?
No, if you want to talk to the guy, you got to air stuff out, air stuff out. But like at that particular moment, it was very clear that like Punk didn't actually like want to talk.
Yeah.
He wanted to like settle some scores. And if you wanted to come down and settle some scores, his office was open. And these dudes walk into his office. I mean, I honestly, like, I think once Punk hears the voice on the other side of the door, I think he probably thinks he's going to get attacked just like the second he hears the voices, knowing it's Matt and Nick and Omega.
Yeah, and especially if you see, like, three coming in against you, and you're like, all right, it's on. Let's do this.
You with a torn tricep. I mean, like, dude, like, it's not lost on me that at least as far as I can put together from these reports, Punk and Steel were pretty heinously outnumbered. You have an injured man who's tired and a Steel who is rabid. Like both these people are injured.
Yeah, I'm just... we called this a couple weeks ago High School Drama Club. That's what this is. This is just unnecessary drama. And CM Punk's right. He works with effing children, but guess what? He's only a couple grades ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's not exactly the beacon of maturity. Yeah. And yeah, no, he's got it all sewed together for his early 40s. Yes, it's what I'm striving to.
Yes, I mean.
Oh, another person who's got it real together in his early 40s, Bobby Fish, who definitely has not been helping things this whole way down.
Yes, Bobby Fish, whose contract was not renewed, now has a podcast, and he's going around... almost basically challenging CM Punk to an MMA fight.
Yes, he's certainly sharing some elite thoughts, isn't he?
Well, I mean, given you sent me the tape of the Punk Fish match where Fish basically kicks out at 2.9. They say 3.1 on TV, but he was pulling a jerk move here too, trying to embarrass Punk on TV.
Yet another member of the elite. You start to put together a narrative very clearly of why. Again, rightly or wrongly, I can't stress that enough. Why CM Punk has justifications in his like dislike of the elite guys.
Yes,
he. I think, in my opinion, rightly does feel as though they are. Well, his term was they're middling their baby face or whatever. Like that they he feels as though they did not want to maximally utilize him and that his success was sort of happening in spite of them, not because of them.
Right.
Like essentially Punk basically thinking, yeah, I'm champion right now because I talked to Khan and because I like Tony Khan respects me and all that stuff. It has nothing to do with the Bucks and Omega thinking that I'm the smart choice for business.
And I'm going to add another layer here, and I'm sure it's been brought up elsewhere, but I'm going to bring it up anyways. Cody Rhodes, to me, felt like, you know, when the reshuffling happened and he lost creative power as well as the other vice presidents, but still felt to me like he was kind of getting edged out of his ideas. And there's been some cryptic tweets between him and Brandy on Twitter where I think I'm right on this. So I'm going to just continue with it anyways. But Cody always, to me, wanted to not have to blow up at anybody about the inter office politics of AEW. And it felt almost like Tony was in on it with all of them. And it was almost like everybody against Cody type of a thing. And you'd hear it in the zeitgeist, in the Twitter chatter and all that. Well, you know, Cody's not like the Bucks in the Elite. You know, they're into having, you know, big five-star matches, and his instincts are just different. They're just too old school. They're this, they're that, the other.
It's interesting how there does seem to be a generally pro-Bucks zeitgeist in the narrative that does tend to find a way to like take over places like Reddit, those sort where it's, yes, Cody's kind of out of step with the Bucks. It's always person X is out of step.
Yes, it's the work rate people who I mean the heavy work rate people. Are like, well, Cody isn't as good a worker as the Bucks, therefore he doesn't know as much about what AEW should be, and I think Cody, not wanting to necessarily burn the bridge, just said, okay, my time here is done. And when he says time to leave the territory, I think it's because he felt like he was being forced out of the territory.
Yes. Yeah, no, I remember that little phrase too. It's time to leave the territory, which sort of like the other slight sort of being like, you guys are still kind of like a smaller fish. You guys are still a territory.
Maybe a little bit, and maybe that's also what you know, Punk is kind of hitting at as well. But couple more quick stories here from the news before we get to the lazy river. Pat McAfee temporarily leaving SmackDown for ESPN College Game Day, presumably be the energy and focus there since Lee Corso is kind of on the decline. But that to me is a fairly big loss, because not only has Pat McAfee been a lot of great fun and energy on that SmackDown show, he has given a second win to Michael Cole, who has been outstanding these past few weeks.
Oh, I completely agree. I still got a few more things to say on Punk, dude.
Oh, do you? Okay.
No,
sorry.
Yeah. I sent you like a PDF of.
Yeah,
like,
I know, but I didn't want to read it because I didn't want to take any notes. Let's finish the Punk.
On the Punk thing, like it. I listened to Lanza's audio here yesterday, and actually a difference for me. And what I think Lanza was right about, 100%, is that Tony Khan needs to keep CM Punk away from WWE. You pay this guy to sit home. Like he actually has utility not being an active playing piece on the battlefield right now. Because CM Punk going to WWE, I know there are some people who are like, it could never happen. It would never. He hates Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon's not there anymore. He hates Paul Levesque. Conversations can be had. Money can be had. Punk talked a lot about money in that press conference.
Yes.
Punk is in it for the money right now. Punk also has an unfulfilled dream. Still, you might not remember it, but it is to main event WrestleMania. CM Punk never got that. And if Levesque said to him, hey, dude, you want to go out there? No, you bullet points. You just run your bullet points by me every week. This the era of the heavily scripted promo here, especially for you. It's over, baby. You can do what you want. You look at how it's working for guys like Kevin Owens. You can feud with Kevin Owens. We got a bunch of great guys for you to feud with here. You can have a WrestleMania program between Owens and CM Punk.
I don't think that's going to happen. Owens had a comment about the whole Punk thing, too.
Oh, did he?
Well, remember, it was a shot at Punk because he sent a picture of himself and Steve Austin, quote unquote, main eventing WrestleMania.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's also.
Would you mind coming in here and losing to Roman Reigns because we can't get The Rock this year, and it's in Los Angeles, biggest city in the world, brother. Come on over.
I mean, look. You know, you got to calibrate accordingly, but if Punk's for real about the money, that's what the money's about, right?
Like, yes.
It's not about little fake belts. It's about making real dollars.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, the press conference, I really don't want this to get lost because, some of it I feel goes like without saying, but I do want to kind of wrap up my thoughts with this. Like, it's not okay to get on a microphone and say, I want to fight other people I work with, and then like invite them to come and fight me. Even though I talked about this as being fair warning, this is like not an okay fair warning to issue. It's just like you're getting a fair warning from a madman. Like, where does this end? Like, does he just like start challenging other random people to fight him in the locker room? Is he JBL now? Like, you know, like if the Bucks and Omega didn't come down there, it was like Punk gonna just keep pushing this. Got a problem with me? Fight me. Got a problem with me? Come and talk. Let's talk. You know, no, I just, he can't be in the locker room at this point. I mean, while they need to pay him to stay at home, I mean, the other thing is he, rightly or wrongly, does not have that locker room. At this point, it's right that he doesn't have that locker room. I'm more saying rightly or wrongly in terms of when he first arrived. Was the well poisoned on the guy? I don't know if we'll ever fully know. But he does not have that locker room. That locker room is a toxic place for him to try to work in. And like, I think it would be more toxic if he came back. But I think, I mean, one other thing here, Hawkins. The EVPs, they need to be disciplined much harder than this. Like, especially if you're talking about sending Punk away. I'm sorry, but like what Kenny Omega and Nick Jackson and Matt Jackson did was make a bad situation absolutely worse. They escalated a bad situation on that evening. Perhaps it was an innocent mistake motivated by a deep love of all things fuzzy and warm. But I don't think it was, Jeff. I you call me crazy here. I just don't think it was. So you're like, yeah, no, I think it's good that they were suspended. I think it's right and good that they like lost the trio titles. And like, no, I think they are every bit as responsible for the events of that evening as CM Punk. But like the ultimately who bears the most amount of blame and should get no applause, no points awarded? Tony Khan. He made this situation from the ground up.
And maybe I'm a little too old school here, but something you said kind of angers me. And I'm it's one of those things that it's a nice platitude, but it's not necessary. It CM Punk doesn't have the locker room. This isn't a team sport. I'm sorry.
Let me explain what I mean when
I understand exactly what you mean by how you say it, but it's one of those things where it's pushed too hard that we all have to have this place where we enjoy coming to work and we all have to be friends. And oh, all of our coworkers have to go out afterwards and have drinks and play the video games in everybody else's room and stuff, as opposed to saying, just going home and being with your wife or whatever. You know, this isn't a camp. This isn't, you know, school. This is your job.
It's like not a class election. No, I get what you're saying. Like, this shouldn't be like some weird class election of, are you going to vote for CM Punk or the elites? Right?
Yeah.
But that is the dynamic. And when I say he doesn't have the locker room, I mean this far more from a business standpoint.
Yeah.
A lot of people in that locker room
who don't.
Nerd reasons. I'm with you. Nerd reasons are like don't want to work with Phil Brooks. Don't think they can make any money with Phil Brooks. I get it. But, you know, like Punk made a point about like the money and the gates and everything. And like, yeah, the elite guys built a nice company here and everything. But Punk is the guy who popped the mega rating. Punk's the guy who drew the mega door. Yeah. And guys like Punk and Moxley, who everybody loves, and Bryan Danielson, these are the analogy I kind of came up with is you have established, credentialed, credibility holding, maybe a little bit long in the tooth, veteran rock bands. Like, you know, your Pearl Jams, not like Pearl Jam 2022, like let's say Pearl Jam 2005, like an established band with no credentials, maybe, you know, on the backside slightly, but like an established franchise. And the Bucks and Omega sort of proudly have always worn this mantle of being like cult, you know, big cult bands. Like they are like big cult college acts. And I think, you know, Punk's kind of right to realize like, look, it's not that you guys aren't good. It's just that like me and Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley are like, and Jericho also another example of this template. We are the guys who ultimately sort of like, you know, we're the toppings on top of the crust and the sauce.
And it's going to drive them nuts because they think that because all these guys who are fans are coming from the indies and stuff like that. But I mean, you got to realize AEW is still doing the smallest building in the city pretty much. And for all of, I mean, another one of the explainers was, you know, when Punk said that Hangman hadn't done anything in this business or that the Bucks and the don't know anything, blah, 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 you know, well, they sold out the Tokyo Dome, and you're just like,
didn't have to cut 20-minute promos in English to really connect with the fan base to sell out the Tokyo Dome.
Yes, we are in that's AAA ball. We are in America right now, which has different standards and different things that people want in their wrestling. And for all the bravado about we want to take on WWE and the little slights and the humorous he's and whatever on being the elite. And when Tony Khan says that, there are certain things you have to do in American wrestling to get to be popular in American wrestling. And if you don't do it, if you just think that your little what you've done elsewhere on a smaller stage is going to get you there, it's not. And I'm not saying WWE does things perfect, because God knows if you've listened to this show more than 3 weeks, You know that we trash what they do, but it's just one of those things where it's like, you guys don't have the scope. You don't have the eyeballs of what this of what a machine the WWE is. And you say you want to take them on, but you're acting like this is PWG where we're all friends. And I think that's Punk's big point right there.
I think there was one that he didn't fully articulate, but I was kind of able to like put together too, which is that like him and Moxley and Danielson and like the guys that Paige are dismissing and poo-pooing away, they are like the last generation of wrestlers that really knows anything about selling pay-per-views. Because there was this like weird half generation of like WWE talent that didn't really have to actually sell pay-per-views. They had like network eventy things that like were promoted and managed differently and everything. Like these guys do offer a lot of institutional experience. They do.
AEW fans want to grade AEW on a curve. That's just my opinion for them. I mean, the hardcore AEW people, the people that can't rationally talk about it.
The shortcomings of like Nick and Matt Jackson as singles stars. I'm sorry, yes. Like Jey Uso is a more compelling singles talent than
that far. Sorry, but okay.
No, I think he's a better promo. I'm sorry. 6 months, Nick Jackson has to carry solo programs entirely on his own. Jey Uso has to carry solo programs entirely on his own. Jay's a better narrative vehicle. Yes, Nick's a better wrestler, but Jay's a better narrative vehicle because, as you said earlier, the demands of American wrestling are not just merely work rate stuff. In a lot of cases, one of the things that Japan exposes people who can't work very well, but Japan also covers up people who can't promo very well. It's a double-edged sort of sword.
No, fair enough. Yeah. And I agree. I mean, like I say, you make money with your mouth in America. And right. I concur with that. Are we done with the Punk talk now?
I think so.
Let's have an awkward segue into our sponsor, HelloFresh.
Oh God. You know, sometimes Hawkins, I am up all night. I am consuming content. I am working on writing copy for sponsors for this show. I am listening to other podcasts. I'm prepping, right? I run out of time. The day is full. It's just full of stuff. So when that happens, I use HelloFresh. What is HelloFresh, you ask me? I'll tell you now. With HelloFresh, you get farm fresh pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Have a packed schedule this fall? That sounds like me. I was just saying, I have a very packed schedule. I'm busy. HelloFresh has meals covered with a weekly selection of 30-plus recipes and 70-plus convenience items, all delivered to your door. You can easily customize your meals with the Hello Custom by swapping proteins or sides. So, like, let's say you got a vegan girlfriend. You don't know what to cook for your vegan girlfriend, who you care deeply about. HelloFresh has you covered. They have you covered, Hawkins. I don't know how to cook this vegan stuff. HelloFresh does it for me. It's never been easier to eat or cook your way or her way. So, HelloFresh, it's wonderful. As I just said, for my girlfriend, when I need to get vegan dishes and I want to like get her something different, HelloFresh has actually been quite good on that front for me. So if you want to try HelloFresh, go to HelloFresh.com/VOW16. Use code VOW16. Some call it VOW16. That's for 16 free meals across 7 boxes and 3 free gifts. That is HelloFresh.com/VOW16 using code VOW16 for 16 free meals across 7 boxes and 3 free gifts. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Thank you, Chris. Anything you wanted to say about Pat McAfee leaving SmackDown since we kind of are sandwiching that? That is a guy in demand. And I know he loves doing WWE, but I think he actually might be done. I know he says he's coming back when college football is over, but I believe his radio show just left satellite radio. I think they're looking to make a big deal in syndication somewhere. I'm not positive on that, but this guy's making deals all over the place. I think wrestling might be on the back burner.
Yeah, I mean, he'll come back at some point. No, certainly, but like I don't know that he's going to be back on commentary when the football season ends. Yeah, I think that's a reasonable expectation. Look, he's been a tremendous breath of fresh air on the show. I just wish that we had gotten more McAfee in the post-McMahon era, because commentary for me has been one of the biggest breaths of fresh air.
Yes.
In the wake of Vince McMahon. Every single show is now enjoyable to listen to. It does not feel stiff.
And even like Corey Graves has been pretty, you know, loosey-goosey, which is nice.
Byron had a really funny self-owning Byron line this week that was in character. It was something about like, it's times like these, I'm glad I don't have a girlfriend.
Yes.
Wonderful. Wonderful stuff. No, I laughed very hard at that line. He can be very funny. I just like commentary has really shined in the wake of this. And like, it's just a very simple way of doing it, right? Like you just don't get in their ear constantly and tell them what to do at all hours of the day, every day, right? Like assume that these grown ass men who have training and background in professional wrestling or in sports announcing know how to keep this thing afloat. And I think it's great. I look forward to when McAfee returns. I'm kind of with you. Don't think he's going to be back anytime soon.
D'Lo Brown has left Impact as a producer. We'll continue with the Los Angeles-based UWN, which I believe is the United Wrestling Network. Darn shame. Love me some D'Lo Brown. One of my favorites. But understand, onward and upward.
Yeah, guy. No big thoughts on D'Lo's.
No, okay.
No, I mean, great wrestler.
As a producer, I have no idea how he is. Yeah, but I liked him on commentary. I liked him on commentary, too. I thought he was pretty good.
Okay.
That ends the wrestling news. Got a big lazy river if we want it, because we had all three shows over the weekend, even before we got to the Scrum and Punk and NXT and Dynamite. Let me just, I'll start Lazy River this week without anything specific, but just my general anger that none of these shows hit the dismount, so to speak. Clash of the Castle, fun card, possibly WWE's best main card in years to me. I loved it, loved the crowd, loved everything. And then they got to the main event. And then they did the Tyson Fury thing. And then Tyson Fury greets the guy who screwed Drew out of the thing. And then they sing American Pie. Just ended like crap. NXT Worlds Collide, good matches, bad finishes overall. With the exception of the two singles titles, which I thought both of those matches were really, really good. We can get into specifics in a bit. And then we get to All Out, where show starts out pretty good, I thought. The Acclaimed tag team title match happens. The crowd is hot for it. They want it. They want the title change. They don't get it. And then they just decide that they don't really care about most of the match until the main event, really. And good main event, I thought. When I say hit the dismount, wrong metaphor probably, because they hit the dismount on this one. Problem is, there was an hour between the Acclaim loss and the main event where nobody gave a crap about anything, even if the work was good.
Yeah, and I think your mileage varies very heavily on the trios matches. If you like that style of match, you probably love those matches. And if you don't like that style of match, you probably got oversaturated by it by the second one.
Probably. But Chris, where would you like to start?
Oh, I got to start by taking a victory lap here. The internet has realized what I have always known, Hawkins.
Uh-huh.
That Sheamus is out here putting out these low-key bangers, people.
That was a great match.
I started to see people saying old man bangers. Oh, where did that come from? Who called them old man bangers? Who's been calling them old man bangers for over a year now? Yeah, no, it was a fantastic match. It delivered beyond my expectations. I was bullish on it just because Sheamus in the UK, kind of, you know, Levesque's going to want him to look good here. It seemed like a profile match, even if it was an early profile match. It was a profile match, and they gave him time, and this match just ruled.
Love it.
Meltzer gave it 5 stars. I don't know, I'd go 5. Although I guess there has been inflation's hitting everywhere, including star ratings these days.
Yes, 5's no longer the best because he's been making things 5.5 and 6.
Yeah, right. No, that's what I mean. Like, yeah, even inflation's everywhere these days, Hawkins. No one is safe. I guess for me, it would, you know, I probably would have put it at like more like a 4.5 or something like if I had like it wasn't quite there, but I remember like at the end of it going like, well, geez, if someone ever asked me like what's like an above 4-star match, I would absolutely just I would just be like this one. Yeah, like not a. It's not a 5-star match because it didn't have like an insane story or anything that like really like hooked you in, but it was just worked so wonderfully. It was great. It's the type of wrestling I like.
And we got Giovanni Vinci up on the main roster. Acclaimed is reformed. I could not be happier about
Imperium.
That. Imperium. What did I say? The Acclaimed?
The Acclaimed.
Okay, that's because I'm looking at notes and it's right above Gunther Sheamus.
Sister Me Daddy Gunther?
Yeah, Sister Me Daddy Gunther. That would be... I love Imperium. I think they're a great stable. I think they're, you know, they're also a little throwbacky in the foreign heel. Ouvoir, if you want.
Yes, no, totally.
But yeah, I love them. I will continue in Clash at the Castle. I thought that 6-woman match was a lot of fun, and God knows if the queen had died last weekend, Bailey would be queen of England. Good. Listening to her try and fight against the chance to the delight of Dakota Kai and Asuka's just being crazy and dancing on the apron because she doesn't know what's going on, I'm convinced. But yeah, that was a fun 6-woman match, I thought. Quite a delight for the fan. Hot opener, which got the crowd going. Good for the women. Good for women's wrestling that they got a reaction like that in a stadium show.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, one thing that is definitely settling in quite nicely is this new Bailey faction. She's got great character work. It looks like they know how to sort of maintain the profiles of Kai and Shirai while still having Bailey as the leader.
The promo on Monday was a little rough.
Yes, when you're talking about dismounts, I thought you were talking about follow-up shows because I kind of like, yes, I felt like the follow-ups to both of these were a little bit like gut punched.
Yeah, yes. I would agree there. Your turn, sir.
Let me take a look at what happened on. Let's do Dynamite here. Okay. I mean, let's talk about the MJF, right? Like we completely left about on one hand. I love like the poetic karmic justice that MJF got outshined by things from outside the ring after he did this at the last paper. Like, no, couldn't happen to a guy who deserved it more. Like karma, baby, karma looks good on you. I think MJF watching this brand on Wednesday, it seemed like they are very much trying to come up with a version where they really can move on even without the Elite potentially. The narrative can continue on without the Elite as like key parts of it. I think MJF's the right guy for this. I think people were really into him, and Moxley similarly. The fire up speech, I don't know that it landed for me, but it landed for a lot of people. And I think, you know, the Moxley MJF feud's good. Not great, but good.
I thought the Mox speech was really, I absolutely loved when MJF stopped with the gotta go see my friend Cody Rhodes and you know, like my favorite wrestler to the game said, when he stopped with the fake WWE praise, the look on Mox's face, that was Mox cutting a promo against his former employer. And that's why it worked for me quite a bit. I mean, he was getting out some things he's wanted to say that he hasn't quite been able to say in a while. And, you know, I think I like Mox a lot. I'm going to say this. I thought Sympathy for the Devil. I hated the booking of that ladder match. That casino ladder match drove me nuts.
Right.
Because I hate when, you know, every single person should now have a gang of people down there to just try and fight off the other competitors to get in there.
Well, there's that. Okay, here's another
sympathy
thing,
for
though.
The Devil's a little too on the nose for me, too.
Here's another thing, though, Hawkins. Stokely, there are 7 people who should want that ass the yes. next night. Like the fallout has to be, okay, yeah, Stokely heisted the chip, but, like, Claudio and Roosh and Andrade.
Why weren't they out there whooping his ass during his yes, promo?
Yes. And more importantly, like have Stokely in the ring and have the other guys basically keeping all those dudes from getting in the ring and interrupting Stokely. Yeah. But like there, that was a real sort of like dropped bit of continuity. And yeah. I was worried about them. Like, oh, so like, you know, like Cesaro's just going to like watch the chip get stolen from him and be like, well, that stinks.
Yeah, I know. You can say it's wrestling and oh, don't take it so seriously or whatever. But you know what? I want you to set rules for the world that we're living in here. And I want you to play by those rules. If this was most of these guys only shot at a real world title match, these guys should be fuming. These guys should be storming Tony Khan's room going, what the F was that? You know, just something. And it should dominate this Dynamite show. Why aren't we in the tournament for a title match?
And as opposed to that would have been wonderful because now you have a kayfabe controversy. And so like you could keep saying things like, oh, wait, Cody's going to address the controversy. And like, you're now sort of, you know, yes, there's a controversy about the title, but it's a kayfabe controversy. It's not the one that's being played off screen.
Yeah, it was just ridiculous. And then, you know, and there's also now the question was, is MJF part of Stokely's crew or is he not? Yeah, Stokely was nowhere to be found during the promo, or were these just guys that he hired, this island of misfit toys?
Right, and then what was the payoff? Like what did Stokely get in? I mean, I'm confused.
There needs to be a reason why all these guys went with Stokely other than he gave them a card. Like even mishmash 80s stables have a reason. Like Devastation Corporation, Skandar Akbar's group, was just like every mishmash of heel you could get. But the whole point was they're being paid a lot of money, mostly to take out the Von Erich brothers.
Yeah, like I get that like these guys could be like a new Merc group. I think I'm would rather than having Stokely aligned with MJF, I would just have this be the establishment of Stokely's mercenary group.
Yes.
And that they are for hire. MJF is the first of many people who have hired Stokely's little mercenary army. And they get stuff done. And now Stokely will always have this one incident to point to that like, oh yeah, my guys can get stuff done.
Yeah, sell them on, I can get you a title shot if you need it. I can get you this if you need it.
I can get the belt off of that guy. Yeah, yeah.
Their guys are such geeks. Other than MJF has to be in there for some credibility because, look, the whole
you're
point-
You're going to have to make Big Cass look like $1 million.
Was it-
William Morrissey.
Lee Moriarty.
Yeah. Oh, that, yes.
Doing that. All they did was have him in there to do that. You just got knocked the F out thing from Friday. And it's like, come on, man. I mean, we got to serious this bunch up after being called ass boys. And I'm just, yeah. The dismount thing here was not very, very good.
No. And yes, right now that group, I'm with you, has some casting problems. Like, love Stokely as the leader. The support guys, verdict is still out. Kenny is saying, let's see how this plays out. Chris is wringing his hands.
Staying on Dynamite and within All Out. I never thought that the Acclaimed would be that over as underdog baby faces. And man, Anthony Bowens' work with his knee was so damn fantastic on that pay-per-view. They should not belt them, though, in Long Island. That is their apex right there. You either belt them that night right there, or you let them be cult heroes for the rest of their career and try and build upon that right now, because it's the law of diminishing returns. They were never going to be as hot as they were that night. It will not be like that in Long Island, in my opinion, Chris. Do you disagree or no?
No, I think you should belt them, but like now you need to really finish off the story that Keith and Swerve are heels. They need to go full heel this time.
Okay.
Yes. I want, and no, the chase is better than the catch here, but eventually the Acclaimed need to catch. Daddy Ass needs to give them the eye of the tiger here. And show them how to be the new age outlaws.
Daddy Ass cannot interfere as much as he had, because it makes them look weak.
No, get that. No. He can't interfere as much. He has to give him the eye of the tiger. He's got to be Apollo Creed here. I'm with you. He can't.
And if you gotta have the Acclaimed win, they need to win strong over them in Long Island, because they have a credibility problem. Quite frankly, they are not as good as FTR. They are not as good as the Bucks. They are not as good, possibly, as the Lucha Brothers.
No, I think the bigger problem here now is that the story of Swerve and Keith going heel is as interesting as the Acclaimed's story is.
Yeah,
and,
well, right now you have a heel and a baby face.
I mean, okay, I know everyone. I get that people keep saying that, but you go back and listen to the Keith Lee during the little scrum thing. Okay. He's saying a lot of heelish stuff. It's not as heel as Swerve, but Keith, the light bulb, if we're looking at the blocking in the match here, the light bulb goes off for Keith. Keith is like, oh, heel, huh? Heel, huh? What if we do the knee breaker on the knee? To me, the story here is that the switch is finally going on for Keith Lee, that like being a heel could be kind of rad, and Swerve selling him on it. Like he's already starting to realize this, but Swerve is going to complete the sale, is where I think this is going. And more importantly, I guess I think it should go, but I feel like they started telling that story on Sunday, and then like especially when the crowd resoundingly booed the Scissor Me Daddy Ass, like Bury the Hatchet stuff at the end of this.
Oh yeah, the Bury the Hatchet stuff died. They should.
No. I think you heat this feud up further. Okay. I think the Acclaimed need to get screwed hard. They need to have the belts won, and they need to get screwed.
And Keith
hard.
Lee is the one who screws them.
Yes. Okay. And maybe Swerve and Keith attack Daddy Ass at the end of it. Like, no, like they, we need to put the heat back. Like, we need to put the heat on the heels so that like we really fall back in love with the Acclaimed chase, that we want to see these guys kick these guys' ass now. Also, I'm like so here for Keith Lee being like Vader 2.0, like doing like Keith Lee's best version of Vader. Like, come on, let's go.
Yeah, no, I'd love to. I want Keith Lee to just have more violent offense.
Right. No, I know. That's, I'm really here for him as a heel, because like he is going to have some enhancement in matches where he just like annihilates people like in the most athletic and devastating ways, and it'll rule. I think it's a great program. I don't think they need to stop this program. I think they need to write it further, is my opinion.
Your turn, sir.
I feel like the trios title thing, like, man, really should have been Orange Cassidy who won that. I just don't see how this helped Death Triangle at all. Like, it seems to me like
makes the Lucha Brothers happy.
I get that.
I agree with you in principle.
They had a couple of moments where they didn't seem very happy during that match either. You know how they can.
Well, it's funny because Punk's the biggest malcontent in a federation with Roosh, with Thunder Rosa, with the Lucha Brothers.
Well, he's the biggest malcontent in English.
Yeah. Oh, man. I think my joke was bringing Tessa Blanchard and really smooth things over.
She joined human resources.
But I think the whole point of building the elite in the first place was we didn't want to make that screw up, where we put the title on, the title's not on the main best trios in our company. And look, I like the Best Friends. They're a fun act. They're over. Are they as good, or in terms of quote unquote wrestling match star rating, you know, pop the fanboy dirt sheet writer as Best Friends? No. So they're going to put them on the Death Triangle, and you didn't have the option to put him on the House of Black, as Aleister Black, I forgot to mention this, he is gone temporarily, has been given a conditional release by AEW. Don't know what conditions those are. I would assume WWE is not in that.
Love of God, please don't talk to Paul Levesque.
Oh, dear God, yeah.
Please, no conversations with Paul. We know he likes you.
I think I can bring back this book. Oh, he's a sucker if he thinks WWE likes him more. I think this was going to be a workman's title type of a thing versus people who are the most over. I think the Best Friends will get it eventually and they'll have good matches. But really right now, what they want to do is make this a hot commodity.
Yeah, I get that.
I don't necessarily agree with what I'm saying right now.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm with you. I think they want, I mean, if you remember that they had this on like the Bucks and Omega and stuff, they want these to be profiled. They don't want the trios titles to be perceived as the less than tag team titles.
Right.
That you have two men holding two titles and three men holding three titles and ipso facto, like, you know, they are less than or whatever. I mean, I think that this is just like sort of the inherent problem, right? Like you know, you.
I think Orange might be AEW's Tommy Dreamer, the guy who's never gonna get the belt. You know, he's gonna be the people's champion.
Yeah, and theoretically, a guy who, especially with the right presentation, you can always heat up to main event status, and like people will be really excited for an Orange Cassidy program against like MJF or something like that. I'll go one step further, dude. I think that the Jane change in his theme song really, it works.
Yes.
It's so good for him. Initially, I was like, and I've now completely 180'd. It's like way better than Where Is My Mind. I get that, like, Where Is My Mind was supposed to like capture like a lackadaisical aspect to him. But what I like so much about Jane is that, like, it can be sort of like, he can come out in a lackadaisical way, but like Jane also is a song where you can come out kind of as a house of fire, like you're ready to kick someone's ass, and like those piano chords like sort of convey that urgency. I think it gives him much greater dynamic range as an entrance theme song than Where Is My Mind does.
I'm gonna jump to NXT.
Okay.
Mako Satomura's had a week. I thought that women's trios title, as much as I hated the trio's concept, I thought she and Mandy Rose had pretty good chemistry, to be honest with you. And Blair Davenport wasn't in the way as much as I thought either. Mandy Rose, she's never going to light the world on fire in terms of critical acclaim, but man, she's a good champ. I know those are two different things, and some people don't think they are, but they are. She's a very good women's champ for an NXT division. Because it totally heals on the audience of what they want NXT to be. And she's not a bad wrestler, but Mako in there too. And then on Tuesday, God, this was the match I wanted when I heard she was in NXT in the first place. Roxanne Perez and Mako Satomura just tore the house down, I thought.
Great. That was, yes. Of course it went the way you would expect it to go, but it was...
It felt like a wrestling match versus they were practicing dance moves, and I loved it. I absolutely loved this match.
And I was just... Maybe this is like what happens when you start getting a little bit older. I was so excited for Roxanne Perez to have this experience of having this really awesome match with Mako Satomura, because like you know that 20 years from now, she will remember and like really appreciate the interaction she had here.
Yeah. And look, this is,
I think very highly of her. I think Roxanne's really
very great. Highly of Roxanne Perez, to the point where I'm going to say she's the next Bayley. And I hope that Triple H knows what to do with a baby face who was built up on NXT and gets super uber popular. And then you bring her to the main roster. You don't turn her heel immediately. You don't make her an idiot immediately. And let's hopefully this whole thing with, I almost called her Sky Blue, with Cora Jade and being too dumb to use a kendo stick. Let's hope that's the hiccup. Let's hope that's it, because she's a star and she has the most, her charisma. They did a after the match thing with for the website and whatever with what's her face, the person who used to be with ROH, and they just signed her. I forgot her name there. Quinn McKay was her name in ROH, but she's now the backstage interviewer at NXT, and she cut a hell of a promo with some emotion in it. And I just thought, yeah, she has it. Let's not blow this. She's not going to have the size. She's going to be a little small, but she's great. She's a great wrestler. And yeah, okay, I agree.
You know what I'm ready for? What I'm ready for here is JC Jane and Roxanne Perez to start getting their career feud going.
Yeah.
Cause these two of this class, both just they're primetime talents. Let's see what these two have. Let's let them like work a feud too. Let's see what's up.
And then to counteract my positivity, I have to snark a little. even though I like the character, Kiana James, she lives in a 90s porno world without the sex scenes. And it's
amazing.
You've had
me thinking about this all week. Like it is nothing but the first 5 to 7 minutes
yes.
of porno. And imagine an entire world conducted with people who are like several notches dumber than average. Like, oh, I hear that you have a leak. Yes, I have had this leak for 2 hours. I am very busy at business today.
All of them showing cleavage. All of it's like I'm waiting for a pizza with a hole in the box to be delivered at some point. I mean, if you want to know the name of her sisters, it's Giovanna Abernio, Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. Easy on the eyes, let's say it. You're into that, but I'm just that, and then she goes talk to Ariana. What's her name? Santino's kid.
Yes, yeah, right.
I almost
right.
called her Ariana Huffington.
Huffington, yeah, I know she does. Right. And now, like Ariana's probably gonna.
And she's the same way. She's a character in this. It's almost like this is all prequel to some giant. Makeout session between all of them, and it's like
the espresso boys are kind of like this too now.
Yes. Yes, boy. But my god, it's like okay, here's hot girl with glasses acting as businesswoman with her just over the top too sexed up assistant, and then runs into the quote unquote actress reading a script. It's like, is there a hot nurse somewhere who can join?
You tell my agent, who is named Philip, that I am very displeased with the agency. Oh, hold on a second, Ariana. It's very interesting. I have a call from Steven. He's a business guy I talk to. Steven!
Duncan! Yes, Duncan, remember?
Yeah, Duncan, where are the documents? I have been waiting for these all morning.
Oh, what is it? We used to have something in improv. I forgot what, I think it was like the McGillicuddy file. And we'd always just refer to it. And it didn't mean anything. It was just, it's this file that would... We couldn't think of anything to label properly. Bring me the McGillicuddy file. It's like, that's what this was. I have important papers I need on my desk right now.
You don't understand. I have a 2:30 meeting. No, it's great. It's someone who... It's like an actor who's like acting in a television show, never having done like the prep work where you like go in bed with the person, you know, like if you in bed with a cop for a week to be a better cop, or like you like go in bed in an office for a week to kind of get a sense of office culture. It's like Keanu James is like, I don't need to do that. I understand the management structure. I got this.
Asia Carrera and Christy Canyon think you're acting stiff.
Jenna Jameson has some notes.
Jenna Jameson has some script notes for you. Exactly. Your go, sir.
Oh, man. Okay. So what else?
I'll throw in something if you
okay, go for it. Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
As advertised, I adored Ricochet and Carmelo Hayes.
Yeah.
Trick really Williams good. Need to stay the hell out of that end of that match. And it was driving me nuts because the tag team match was a screw job with it's not Bronson Reed. What's the name of the other Diamond Mine guy?
Oh, no, I know what you're talking about. Damon something.
Yeah. That pissed me off. I mean, all these matches with the screw jobs pissed me off, but that's that one the most because that thing was a banger from front to back until all the Trick Williams crap. Loved that, man. Run that back at a Mania or a man, stadium
and Ricochet finding promo fire has just been, it's like, yes. Where has this been in all my life? Wow. Wardlow, I thought was a very interesting, like the utilization of him on Dynamite was very interesting. I get on one hand having him squash Tony Nese. On the other hand, I feel like we've been running in place with this dude for a minute.
Yes.
And that like he needed to be in this world title picture and it made no sense.
Yes, he's a TNT title holder.
Right. I mean, honestly, like if you really think about this for a company that always cares about rankings and stuff, and I know that the ranking system's undoubtedly unbelievably screwed up at this point, if they've even bothered to assess it. Wardlow would be very, very high. He would absolutely have to be a world title contender. He's the current holder of the second highest championship. Like he should have been in this title picture. I think the only reason they didn't want to do it is just because they're so like MJF. But like, frankly, this is a great time to reintroduce the crashing cars of Wardlow and MJF. They don't have to impact at this point. But just having them on either side of a bracket. And reminding people, these two dudes hate each other. And now they're going for something that like they both want. That's interesting.
Wardlow's feuds have sucked.
They've all sucked. And like this guy, you need to be super into him. You know what I mean? He's so big and dominating.
Well, that's the problem.
We need to love him. We need to have a real attachment with him. And these feuds aren't getting us there.
Well, that's also the issue is that, and it's something that modern fans don't realize you need to do because they always go, well, it makes you look weak, but these types of powerhouse champions need an obstacle to overcome and they need to be a credible world title level thing to overcome as opposed to Satnam Singh and the ROH goofs. You know, it's one of those things where like I'm here for Wardlow and Hobbs who had some very interesting booking on All Out, which I liked actually, but
but like, you know, what comes to mind immediately,
but do you want to beat Hobbs or do you want Hobbs to end up unseating Wardlow? But you need somebody of that caliber or you need him. You need Wardlow to feud with a Moxley or a Page or a Danielson, someone of that caliber and be able to overcome it.
Wardlow needs what comes to mind is he needs something similar to the gimmick that Diamond Dallas Page was doing in 1997 with the ribs. The ribs went on too long, but especially for Wardlow, it would be good for him to have this like rib injury thing. That's like kind of like a vulnerable spot that he's working through and it's heroic and he ultimately prevails and stuff, but something that like, I don't know, allows for a little bit more intrigue and a little bit more vulnerability in these matches without completely giving up the ghost. Like, Hobbs would be a great guy for him to have a feud with. He beats Hobbs, but the residual of beating Hobbs is that he's now dealing with this rib injury and he's not right for 6 months, and it ultimately leads to him losing the title.
Yeah, or he loses to Hobbs and gets the ribs then and starts the ascent back, because I think it would be, I mean, you don't have to do it now, but I think Hobbs getting the TNT title, then Starks getting his first win against Hobbs for that title should be the way to go here. in some way. I found that very interesting that he got murder death. I mean, he didn't get murder death in the match, but he got beat clean.
He got beat. Yeah, it didn't
bug me at all.
There's that, but like, it just didn't feel like Starks really, like the way it opened up. No, well, the way the match opened up, I think, was a mistake. Where, like, Starks came in House of Fire, and then, like, Hobbs was really able to kind of tamp him down pretty quickly after that. Like, I know the match got more competitive from there, but it set, like, a certain tone of a differential between Starks and Hobbs that Starks was never going to overcome.
Well, I hope that's the story, actually. Because I hope it's just that, hey, Hobbs has his number until Starks goes back and redefines what he wants to do and how he wrestles. Especially with this neck thing or something. Because, yeah, everybody was expecting the coronation. I was like, I don't know, guys. I think Hobbs is the money here right now. Even though Starks is a star in the making, it just didn't feel like the time. But I know a lot of people were upset by it. I was not so much.
No, I mean, everyone always gets a little upset when a heel goes over a well-liked babyface. But, like, this is how you build good heels. If we want to get to Hobbs versus Wardlow, I think it was very important for Hobbs to beat Starks here.
Okay. Yeah. Your turn if you have anything else.
Okay. Let me see here. I just did Wardlow. I guess my final thought on Dynamite is that for me, it was hard to sink my teeth into the rest of the episode. After they kind of had, like, with how they set up, that's like a tournament. I don't know, like, it, the work was fine on this show, but it was just like, it felt a little flat for me on the rest of Dynamite. Well worked, but just a little flat. And then
I'm with you. I felt like, you know, I felt like we should establish hotter feuds here as opposed to let's give them a good wrestling show. I if you're watching this and you don't know anything about the scrum too, I, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, well, okay, due to circumstance, I mean, tell us that they're suspended at least, as opposed to we're just going to avoid everything about talking about this.
Yeah.
And feel like nothing ever happened and nobody ever existed. And I understand that strategy. It's not the worst strategy in the world. Don't get me wrong.
It gives you more narrative flexibility, but
it also feels like you're lying to people.
Yep. Or like a little.
Like, you don't need
shit
to talk about how they got into a fight or whatever. You just said they've been suspended for
conduct outside
conduct
of the organization.
Unbecoming. Yeah.
Right. Like outside of the purviews of our, you know, the wrestling sport that we put on here, you know, like, so yes, you can keep it still within a kayfabe world. I know, of course, people are like, you know, living on the joke of what will the casuals think? But like, I don't know. Stick with me here, people. They can't all be 1 million passionate, ravenous fans, right? Like, or 2 million rabid, passionate fans. Go to a WWE show. Do you really see 2 million passionate fans?
Especially when you're only getting like 100,000 to 200,000 buys.
No, you need, you gotta, I get it. Not everything has to be done at service of the casuals, especially not for a product that does like have a base that is built around like cult wrestling fandom. And AEW's definitely like, the cult of wrestling is very much an important part of the AEW formula. And like, you shouldn't alienate that.
It drives me nuts. You should
keep the casuals like in the loop here, and you should actually give a shit about what they're thinking as they're watching all of this.
You need to have everything explained to you like a little child or whatnot. Well, you know, if four major characters who just won titles are not on the show, you know, it's that kind of like, I don't need things explained to me with exposition and stuff. I don't. As long as it's true to the world and true to the thing that you set there. And that's the problem that a lot of wrestling has, is it doesn't do that. So then they over explain things because they, you know, they're mostly lazy and whatnot. But yeah, a little bit of just, hey, they've been suspended, and then everybody else can go run to the internet and see what happened. But
And then, I'm with you. I think the other big mistake on Dynamite here was it was too much wrestling and not enough jumping some angles. Like, let's get some hot stuff started.
Yeah,
like,
let's heat up the hater DMD thing other than just a backstage vignette.
Yeah, right. I mean, don't get me wrong. Garcia and Yuta is a good match that I'm interested in seeing. Like, I didn't need to see it last week.
Let me talk about that real quick then.
Yeah.
This is one thing they did right. Even though that pure title, that's mean crap, and they need a referee who knows the pure rules, and they need to do actually put some graphics on the screen with, say, rope breaks left, so to speak, so we can learn pure rules as opposed to just being told pure rules. They finally built up an interesting character and gave him the coronation where they needed to give him the coronation, in Daniel Garcia. He had to win the title here in Buffalo. Otherwise, if you're going to elevate him, I don't think that.
I'll grant that. So then maybe I would have done one less match in the title bracket this month.
Okay.
Week. Yeah, no, I'm with you. Like now that you're making a compelling argument here. Like maybe Hangman Danielson didn't actually need to happen.
So that he doesn't overshadow the win.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Let's end it there. We've talked a lot of wrestling today. This show's fairly long for your weekend. We hope you enjoyed it. We'd like to thank HelloFresh. Once again, what's the deal, Chris?
Okay, so you get 16 free, it's like 16 free over 7 something with 3 gifts.
Okay, 16 free gifts
meals over 7 orders. Yes, over 7 orders with 3 additional things.
You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. I am on Fight Game Media after Dynamite giving hot takes. That's patreon.com/FightGameMedia for $5 a month. I also just did Fightful Overbooked coexisting with Rob and Maggie After Dark on Fightful Select. Go check that out. It's a nice little interview on their Patreon, patreon.com/Fightful. But of course, tens of thousands of you already know that. Chris has a Patreon, not as big as Fightful's.
No.
It's getting there.
Yeah, we try. Okay, we're at 35, so we got some work. Look, come on, people. Let's go over to patreon.com/DWATG this week. I'm going to drop another episode here. It's if you follow me on Instagram, you can see what else I'm doing, which is instagram.com/DrNove or at Dr. Nove on Instagram. I've been very busy doing music, but I'll have another politics show here out probably in the next week or so. I just need to sit down and draft something out. So go and check that out over at patreon.com/DWATG. Follow me on Twitter at DWATG, where I occasionally opine about politics now, less now than before. Mostly I'm on Instagram, which is Dr_Nove.
And thanks again to Mindy's for the baked goods.
So good.